This is The Playbook.
I have an extraordinary entrepreneur, Michelle Poole. She is the president of Crocs. I am so excited because my house should be named a crocodile because there's so many smiles of people wearing Crocs all around in Southern California. Probably the most practical, best looking shoe you can wear in Southern California. Welcome to The Playbook, Michelle.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, David.
And it's so nice to have you because we're both celebrating anniversaries. We're in the 5th year anniversary of The Playbook, but Crocs is in its 20th anniversary. And so I thought I'd start because I believe in all great brands, there's no revolution in a brand, it's evolution. And I was hoping you could talk through the reconciliation of patience and persistence in the brand evolution of Crocs to give us a little bit of history and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for the opportunity to talk about one of my favorite topics. We're 20 years old this summer. So I sort of like to say we're finally out of our teenage years, which is kind of always kind of nice because you go through some ugly phases as a teenager. Crocs isn't different. We've been on a really interesting journey. So I've personally been at the brand for 8 years, I think this week. I kind of joke that it's been an 8 year overnight sensation, but you know, it really has taken, to your point, it's been a series of kind of intentional and incremental changes that we've made to the brand. I think really foundationally, in the early days when sort of the team came in to really turn the brand around was having a really simple and clear playbook for success. And there were kind of a number of steps we took, and that playbook has actually really not changed a great deal from the very early years, how we've brought it to life and how we've sort of accelerated different parts of it have obviously continued to evolve, and the consumer and the market has continued to evolve. But you know, having a core set of plays, of vision of what was going to really drive success was really critical.
And to that end, footwear especially transformed over decades of your own personal experience and professional experience to one of being, you know, a shoe company per se to a lifestyle brand. And I think never more in your career reflective of that is Crocs. But for you, you've been for over 3 decades or nearly 3 decades with some of the biggest lifestyle brands. And that has changed as well. How has your personal journey relative to the Croc journey in the last 8 years also evolved, especially pertaining to being a lifestyle brand, not just a shoe company?
Yeah, so I've had 30 years now. I've just completed 30 years of my career, and it's been a thrilling ride. I've been lucky enough to work for 7 different brands. So I started out in the jeans industry back in the early 90s, Pepe Jeans. I did a stint at MTV in Europe, very relevant brand. I moved into footwear with Converse, and then crossed the Atlantic to the US with Converse, and then did a stint at Kangol, the iconic headwear company. I did multiple years at Timberland. Before Crocs, I was at Sperry Topsider, it's an iconic boat shoe sort of preppy brand. And then the last 8 years at Crocs. So really what my whole career has been about is brand building and storytelling and bringing great brands to life with really exciting, compelling product. So I'm really the combo of a brand builder, a marketer, a storyteller, with someone who also loves to think about product and how that brand can translate into great product for the consumer. So I think, you know, my journey is really about learning. I think every brand is different. It's like being in a relationship. I think you need time to be in a relationship with the brand you work for and really learn about all its quirks and its characteristics. And then you sort of focus on its strengths. And over time, you sort of hone it. So I feel like it's been such a privilege to have this career working with such an array of brands that have different stories to tell. And I think the common thread is really finding what's different, what's special about those brands. I think nearly all the brands I've had the privilege to work for have had icons. So Timberland has sort of the yellow boot, Sperry Tops, I had the boat shoe, Kangol have the, well, they called it the 504, the iconic sort of hat, flat cap, and Crocs has the clog. So I think I've really learned the power of icon and driving relevance around icon as the heartbeat of the brand, and then kind of building out from there.
And one of the other things that you understand that a lot of people don't, especially with the emotional attachment that's inclusive in an iconic brand, lifestyle brand, is revenue. And, you know, I talk a lot about encouraging people. It's not just because I have three daughters, but about equity and inclusion and leadership of women and providing opportunity for women to shine. And the numbers aren't lying, because we've been on this journey for a while, at least I have as a key executive, of providing more opportunity when there wasn't proof that it was a good business choice to have equity inclusion. And now people like you are the milestones that I use as examples when I have boards of directors or venture capital firms, why we would want to invest in a president or an executive like yourself. And, you know, the numbers in your case are outstanding. And you're, you know, we're talking about, you know, I think you've reached over 73% gross in the third quarter of last year, $626 million or more this year. Again, sustainable growth. I know your CEO, Andrew Rees, said something around, you know, almost 50% of constant currency basis points. It's ridiculous, the proof that you had. How are you able to unromanticize the emotional connection that, you know, you have seen, especially with companies that you've listed, where people are in love with their own product and they end up forgetting about the most important part of business, which is to make a lot of money so you can help and employ a lot of people and have even more fun? How have you been able to reconcile such success economically as a leader beyond the emotional attachment in the branding and creativity side of what you possess as an executive?
I think it's thinking about the sort of the full opportunity, and that really, you know, you may not appeal to every consumer, but I think certainly at Crocs, you know, one of our values is delightfully democratic, with a small D, I like to say. And it's realizing that, you know, a lot of people can have access to our brand. And I think, this idea of inclusivity and democracy, it's not for all brands. You know, some brands choose to be very purposefully niche, and their strength is in their niche appeal. But we believe at Crocs that broad appeal does not dilute the aspiration of the brand. It does not dilute the strength of our product or of our message. You know, and come as you are is actually kind of our brand mantra. And the idea is, and the insight is really that, you know, in the early days, Crocs was really a brand that was bullied for how it looked. And, you know, we believe that consumers, any consumer of any type around the world, should be able to feel comfortable wearing Crocs. And we want that. And we want to sort of say, you know, come all, like, come join our brand, you know. And I think that that's been part of our appeal, because, you know, we may be in some cases the very first shoe someone ever puts on. You know, my son had Crocs, I think, at three, and before I worked at Crocs, and it was the very first shoe he could independently put on. And for some, it might be the last shoe in their life they put on, because they don't have to, you know, bend over and lace it up. So, you know, I think we appeal to young girls. You talked about your household, young boys, you know, older consumers, and consumers all over the world. So we believe that there's real strength in our broad appeal, and we don't feel that it's limited our credibility or the aspirational factor of our brand.
And the collaborations that you have are not only unique, but they're authentic, which is a rarity. We, you know, see people, very famous people in the sports and entertainment field that I'm in, you know, CJ McCollum's a close friend of mine. And I will tell you off camera, you know, he's bragging to me about, you know, have you worn these, man? I was like, yes, I live in Southern California. Everybody wears them out here. But Justin Bieber and Post Malone's another friend as well, with Just Mike. But what I found even more fascinating, it wasn't just individuals. It's very difficult today to collaborate and coordinate movement with other brands, company brands. And I see Croc with other brands doing collaborations, that are mutually beneficial, what criteria do you utilize to, one, put the priority on a brand-to-brand collaboration, and two, to pick the right brand? Because as I look and see the brands that you're with, they're also lifestyle, best of breed types of, you know, special edition opportunities.
Oh, I love this question. So my answer is going to be, for anyone out there listening who's in finance, they're going to hate this answer, but I use the math. I use the math, 1 + 1 = 3. And the way I think about it, David, is that to me, a successful collaboration is bringing together two entities. So Crocs plus, it could be an individual, it could be a music group, it could be a movie property, it could be another brand, right? And the I guess the result of bringing these two brands or entities together is greater than the sum of the parts, right? So that's kind of the 1 + 1 = 3. So for example, Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, I know this is also a podcast, so some people won't be able to see this, but you know, we partnered with Kentucky Fried Chicken because there was something mutually beneficial. You know, we created sort of fake, what we call the gibbets, are the charms that go in the holes in the shoes. We created chicken scented nuggets that went on the shoes. And, you know, the KFC community went nuts for it. The Crocs community went nuts for it. I mean, we had wait lists. These were on the sort of the resale sites. I mean, people couldn't get enough of this. So what we really think about is, are we ultimately, when we bring these two partnerships, whatever partnership it is, does the consumer win? Do we create something exciting, unexpected, covetable, newsworthy, like what's the outcome, right? And I think we really try and put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make sure that we've got something really exciting for the consumer. You can put a logo on anything and it's like, so what, right? We try and really push the envelope. We did some sky high platforms with Balenciaga and we sent them down the runway at Paris Fashion Week. I mean, who would have thought, right? Who would have thought, you know, a year later, we were doing something with KFC, right? You would never put Balenciaga and KFC together, right? But we've found some really creative ways to bring some exciting partnerships to life.
And through that partnership, you start realizing not only from birth until the later years of comfort and convenience that are created by Croc, but there's a versatility. And I'm going to share a quick story. Marcus Allen was a close friend, a running back, the Hall of Fame running back. And he was the first person that I've ever seen to wear a $5,000 custom-made suit with tennis shoes. And I was a lawyer, you know, running a sports agency at the time. And I looked at him wearing my normal dress shoes. And I said, brother, if you could pull this off, I will owe you forever. And so will so many generational people to show the versatility of wearing, you know, tennis shoes with a white sole. And now I see the same versatility that I saw years and years ago with Crocs. I see them being worn in every capacity because the value of comfort and convenience, you know, and you know this better than me, style. You know, I'm just never ahead of the curve in style. I'm more on the Jim Harbaugh style of things where my wife makes fun of me for looking the exact same since she's known me in the fourth grade. But it is now an iconic, versatile thing. You know, what types of things have you seen beyond the collaborations, how people wear Crocs that even you may 8 years ago have never even imagined? Do people wear them with suits today? I know swimwear. What are the versatility of Crocs? Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the things that's really changed, as you said, is actually the apparel business has really changed in the last kind of 20 years since Croc was created. And I think now, you know, whether it's a full-on sneaker or slide, you know, a lot of teenagers wear slides with socks, you know, I think this idea of easy on, easy off and comfort, as you said, is now, you know, the priority for consumers. It's not a nice to have, it's a must have. And in some ways, when you think about the clog silhouette, you know, I think of it as a sweatpants for the feet, right? It's easy on, it's easy off, any size foot can wear it, right? And it's interesting, a lot of collaborations when we launch them, you know, I sort of read all the comments in the social media posts, is people will say, I can't believe it. This is my first pair of Crocs and man, I love them. And there's all these memes out there that sort of show people like you buy one pair and then you're in. And then, you know, first you wear them to the grocery store, then you wear them to the office. And before you know it, you never take them off. And I do think that once people actually kind of figure out and realize how comfortable they are, I think, you know, consumers just don't want to trade out of comfort. And so, you know, fashion obviously ebbs and flows and different things come in, but I do think the ease and the versatility of the classic silhouette, you know, our basic clog silhouette is really here to stay. It's like saying, you know, will people ever stop wearing sweatpants? Well, no, they've kind of discovered them and they're here to stay, you know? So we think there's a lot of staying power for what we bring.
And I think that staying power, as a final subject matter, the staying power comes beyond the profits and the performance and the style. It really, to me, always is about the purpose-driven company. And I like a saying that I heard, my thoughts about my purpose are my purpose. And it seems to me from the people that I meet that work with you and you, as I've been blessed now to get to know you a little bit, and I want to do more with you. We need more of Michelle on her TV shows and other platforms. But what are your thoughts about purpose concerning Crocs?
Yeah.
Because I know you are a purpose, not just profit, but a purpose-driven company.
Yeah, and I'm so glad I get a chance to talk about this. You know, I think I'm a very big believer in the purpose. Purpose is who you are, not just what you do, right? And so I think what we've done at Crocs over the last several years is we've really taken what started as an external message around come as you are. You know, come as you are was an invitation for consumers. It was the kind of media sort of strapline message. We've now really brought that inside the organization, and we have what we call three pillars of purpose that really are like a three-legged stool, and what they're all important. One is around sustainability, and we talk about internally comfort without carbon. So we're on a mission to be net zero by 2030. So that's kind of one pillar. The second pillar is all around inclusivity. We talked about that. Like, you can't talk about being an inclusive brand to your consumers if you don't live those values inside the brand, inside the business. So we talk about comfort for all people. So this is about a journey. I will never say, you know, obviously you're never done. This is a constant journey to really figure out how you can be the most inclusive employer. And we really think about, can our employees be comfortable in their own shoes? Can they come to Crocs and work for Crocs and feel themselves? And to me, that's the true watermark of whether we're living those values. And again, hard work, you've got to constantly listen and flex with your workforce. And then the third pillar is all around community. So we think about comfort for our community. So this is really about Crocs giving back. Could be right on our doorstep, it could be across the world, but this is about us giving shoes and funds and time for those who need it most. So recent example, we had some terrible fires in Colorado on the last day of last year. 1,000 people lost their homes, completely gone, burnt down. And we were able to go out into the community in our neighborhoods right across the Boulder County. And we were able to give free Crocs to every teacher and every kid in every school in the whole of the Boulder County. You know, I think it was 30,000 new pairs. So just one small example, but, you know, these families had lost everything. And so it was a small gesture. It was providing some comfort, you know. So those three pillars are, they're never done. They're a work in progress, but it's a very deep commitment to make sure, again, that we can really walk the talk. And this isn't something on a website somewhere, or on a poster on a wall. This is something that we're living and breathing every day.
Oh, you definitely walk the walk, and you walk them in the convenience and comfort of Crocs. A pool full of Crocs. She's Michelle Poole, the president of Crocs. And we're just delighted to have you. Like I said, we look forward to having you on our TV shows, on the multiple platforms, the lessons that you not only are teaching, but you yourself, an iconic leader for many people to look up to hopefully surpass someday with the amount of not only profit, but purpose that has been involved in your career and your company. Everybody, let's celebrate a dual anniversary, the 20th anniversary of Croc, the fifth anniversary of the playbook. This is David Meltzer with Michelle Poole here on Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.